We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Well, certainly, because emotionally he's invested just like the most rabid of any fan. He takes these losses hard. I mean, this is not a real pleasant time to be around him. But you know, everybody associated with the Sox, everybody that cheers for them on a daily basis, they can't be happy with where it is now, but they see a glimmer of hope. And so, yes, it's been a frustrating season, but also the best team will start to play better and better as the year moves along. We're going to see if the Sox have that.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That, of course, is the voice of Steve Stone. We spoke with him yesterday, and he's talking about Jerry Reinsdorf, his reaction to the White Sox 9 games under tonight as they head to play the Yankees. And we are delighted to welcome in David Sampson, Nothing Personal Daily Podcast, and he joins us on the Busey Bank Score Hotline, building business, growing wealth since 1868. David, of course, longtime MLB executive and a guy who's a friend of the program. David, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. Good morning.
So Jerry Reinsdorf apparently not doing great. And it's funny. I don't think it's necessarily funny, but David talked to Hawk Harrelson on Saturday. And Hawk said that he had said that Jerry ought to sell the team. And he called Jerry and explained to him that he was worried about his health, that this can't be good for him going through this sort of thing. So even Hawk Harrelson is saying it might be time to step aside from this, I mean, there's not many more loyal lieutenants than Hawk, and he's worried about Jerry. And you heard Stoney say that Jerry's held to be around right now. Well, he didn't say that. I said that. But he's taking it badly, the White Sox disastrous season.
Well, he ought to be taking it badly because it's been a number of years where he thought and he was told by his people that he had a good team. He put a bunch of money in, signed a bunch of young players, and it's just not working. And what you do in April when it's not working is you say, hey, we're just starting slowly. It's going to be fine. And then when it's not working in May, you say, well, there's teams like the Marlins in 03 that went from 10 under to the best record in the baseball for the last 4 months of the season and won the World Series. So that's pretty good. That could happen to us. And then you get into June and you say, uh-oh, it's not happening for us. So I do not agree with the soundbite that you just played, which says that the better teams start playing better as the season goes on. The better teams play well the entire season. And there gets to be a point where a slow start becomes who you are. And it's not that it's a slow start. It's a reflection of the type of team you have. And from the White Sox standpoint, that's exactly where we are. There is no miracle happening in Chicago right now on the South Side. There is no indication, given where their numbers are, given who the players they have and how they're performing, that they're going to turn it on like a light switch and all of a sudden make a run here in a division that's, you know, mediocre. So I think that the White Sox have a problem, and I think that they need to make changes. And I think that Jerry is more apt to make changes than he is to sell the team. And in terms of his health, I think that he is a veteran owner. He's owned teams through championships and through bad seasons, and he's pretty smart at understanding perspective. And I'm sure he is extremely frustrated right now and certainly wishes that the delusion of grandeur that they all had would come true. But I don't think it's enough that he is going to say, I hate this, forget it, I'm done, I'm selling. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Well put, David. I'm also curious and fascinated and slightly jealous about what's going on in South Florida down there this week. You've got two NBA Finals games for the Heat. You've got two Stanley Cup Final games for the Panthers. You've got a Marlins franchise that has two World Series championships, as one of our texters pointed out earlier. We were having a conversation earlier about how good of a sports city Miami actually is. And then there's the Dolphins You're down there. You've lived it. You've been part of it as a Marlins executive. How would you say Miami is as a sports city? Because I can't imagine it being much more exciting anywhere in America right now than South Florida.
Well, it's a great run right now, but I can tell you that as president of the Marlins, I really was less than happy when the Heat were doing well or the Dolphins do well, because it takes attention away from your team. And if your team's playing well, you want attention. If your team stinks, you don't want attention and you're okay. But the Marlins are doing well and no one cares because everyone's focused on hockey and basketball right now. But in a couple of weeks, it'll all be over and then the attention will be on the Marlins. But in terms of Miami being such a great sports city, I would say that from a corporate standpoint, it's mediocre. From a fan affinity standpoint, it's mediocre. And what's great about it is when the teams are playing well, like any other city, right, it's a bunch of front runners. And that's not an insult. That's sort of the disposition of most fans. When things are going well and you get to talk about it at the water cooler, which is such a boomer expression because nobody goes into the office anymore. But that's good. But every city's like that. In the Stanley Cup and the NBA Finals, it's damn cool. It's going to be one hell of a week for South Florida and these great events that are happening. And that's cool. If you're the mayor or you are a corporate citizen or just a regular ticket holder, this is what you dream about, the possibility of having more than one team successful at one time. But I can tell you from the Marlins standpoint, with what they have going on, they're beating up on bad teams, but that's what you're supposed to do. They've got the best hitter on the planet playing right now for them in Arias, who's hitting .399. And they've got a chance to actually make the playoffs in a non-shortened season for the first time since 2003. And that's pretty cool. They have a better chance than the White Sox do, or even the Cubs.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing that the White Sox and the Cubs have going for them, as you well know, is that their division, both teams, they're pretty bad. I mean, the Sox are only 5.5 games out. I don't know what happened last night, but they were 5.5 games out going into yesterday, and they're, what, 9 games under .500? That's insane.
Yeah, but remember, this year, it's the unbalanced schedule went away. So you actually don't get to play teams in your division as much as you used to. So the chances of making up ground, it gets diminished because you don't have that stretch where at the end of the season, we play the team ahead of us 8 times in the past 11 games. If we go 7-1, all we have to do is be within 6 games. At that point, we sweep, and then we're tied for the division, and everything's great, right? That's just not happening this year. So people don't talk about that too much, but they talk about the pitch clock and the bigger bases and everything else. The change in schedule may have the biggest impact on whether your team's a playoff team than any other rule change.
Who's the biggest superstar in Miami sports? Is it Jimmy Butler?
It is Jimmy Butler. I would say Tua is right there as well because it's still an NFL city and the Dolphins are still the most popular. But Jimmy Butler's had an amazing run getting an 8 seed here into the playoffs. The problem with hockey is so many people, there's not a lot of name recognition. There's not a particular, I mean, Kachuk is a superstar and what he's done during these playoffs. But I think Butler has the mantle. People asked me on a recent show whether Jimmy Butler has now surpassed Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and is now in the Mount Rushmore of Miami Heat all-time players. And I laughed. I mean, of course that's not the case. You better put a ring on your finger if you even want to talk about that. Getting close is not good enough. And Dwayne Wade has rings, and Bosh has rings, and LeBron and Shaq. But it's exciting what he's doing. But again, what's happening with the Heat is that they've got players who other teams didn't even want to draft, and those players are hitting shots. And the NBA has changed, as you know, from watching the Bulls. It's just about hitting shots now. And people use the expression, it's a make-or-miss league, and that has never been more true than it is today.
David, we were talking earlier today about Marcus Stroman because he won the Player of the Week honors. He went 2-0, 0.00 ERA, 5 hits, 14 Ks, and 15 innings. And they're really, you're hard-pressed to figure out what he could have done better in the week. Now, they have a decision to make about him. And the thinking is if they're going to extend him, then they should do so. If they're not, then they should trade him. And they'll have that. He's 31 years old, arguably pitching better than he has ever has. He seems to feed off that Wrigley crowd. It's he's one of these guys, kind of like Javi Baez was, where the energy of the crowd seems to fuel him somehow. But he's been really good. How do you make a decision on a guy as to whether or not you're bringing him back or not when he's playing at his best? In other words, is there a danger of him pricing himself out of a future in Chicago? He's been around. He's, you know, is this a sign of maturity? How do you evaluate this?
Well, first of all, whenever you can get a Blutarski GPA as your ERA, you're doing something right. So that is a positive. What most teams do, and I was so guilty of this, and it's such a horrible habit, is that you pay players at their absolute high. And when you do that, there's nowhere to go but down. So what Stroman's doing this year, it's exciting, but you have to look at the overall team, and you have to look at what the makeup of the Cubs is and what you're missing. And you have to look at them in relation to not just their division, but to the rest of the National League. And you realize that you're missing pieces. And with the money they spent and the people they put together, it just hasn't been good enough so far. If Stroman thinks that he is a Max Scherzer or a Justin Verlander who should be getting 30 plus or even 40 plus million a year, you have to have the guts to say no. And many owners do not have that. They feel like we've got to keep our guy, right? We've got to keep the momentum going. He's so good for Chicago. He's so great. And then all of a sudden, at $35 million, you realize he's taken up such a big percentage of the payroll that it's just not good for the team. And you have to look no further than Los Angeles, where you've got two of the best five players in all of baseball on a team that's 31-30 and is not going to make the playoffs again. I'm talking about the Anaheim Angels of Los Angeles. So the best front offices know when it's time to get rid of a player and know that getting rid of a player at his high is actually beneficial to your team in the long term. And the Cubs have to be thinking that, because this is not a year where they can expect to make the playoffs.
Natural follow-up, David. So the Cubs go to Anaheim tonight to begin a three-game series. We just saw Shohei Ohtani in Chicago. He blistered the White Sox pitching and hit two home runs worth about 900 feet combined. He's going to be a free agent. He may be traded before that. There's going to be teams in a bidding war. The Cubs might be one of them. It's an ongoing conversation here. What would he be worth? What would you be willing to invest in Shohei Ohtani? Is he worth $500 million in his next contract, in your mind, as an ex-executive?
So I did a segment on this on Nothing Personal, and here's how I broke it down. He is a top-of-the-rotation starter, and top-of-the-rotation starters consistently, let's say, makes $30 million a year. He is a middle-of-the-order bat who hits for power. His average is down a tick, I think, here. But he is a middle-of-the-order bat, and those bats get $30 million. So he's two players for one. Each could make 30. So is he now worth $60 million? And my answer is yes. When you're putting together a team, you have to fill those two roles. You need someone at the top of your rotation, and you need someone in the middle of your order. And so would you pay him 60? Yes. But would you go 10 years, which is what he wants? He's not going to be a top-of-the-rotation starter and a middle-of-the-order bat for 10 years. But what teams have shown is they're more interested in now than later. They're willing to suck up the end of a contract and know that they're overpaying and not getting any of the results they want late because they want it early. So there are going to be multiple teams who are after him and who are willing to give him $50-plus million. He's definitely going to get more than Scherzer and Verlander, so he will make the most per year of any player ever. And he's going to get more notionally than any other player. So he's going to break both records, and there will be multiple teams bidding for him, and it's just going to be up to him. It's not going to be about celebrity videos or who's got the nicest neighborhood for him to build a house. It's really going to be about him deciding where he wants to live, because he's going to have that type of choice on every coast and in the middle of the country as well. So it is the biggest story to watch outside of what's going on with the regional sports networks, but those are the two biggest stories in baseball this year.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's fascinating, because if you're a team like the Cubs, you can afford him, but is it intelligent spending? In other words, they keep talking about, would you be better off bringing in five guys on a $100 million deal or one guy for half a billion, right? And that is kind of what the decision would come down to. We see teams that have put together super teams. We're watching the Cubs play the Padres. they're not firing at all, the Padres. I mean, they got great players, but they're not all great at the same time.
That's baseball. It's not like basketball where you can put a big three together and make a run. Baseball is different. Just what we talked about with Ohtani and Trout, and they can't even sniff the playoffs. Here's the thing about five guys at 100 versus one guy at 500. This is a debate we had in the front office every year. It always drove me crazy at the end of a season when my GM would come up to me and say, hey, I think we should go after X. And X was the number one pitcher on the market. And I would say, well, that's not really adding value. I don't need you to tell me that we should sign the number one pitcher. I want you to tell me who we can sign for $100 million who is going to outperform his contract instead of signing a guy for $400 million where it's very unlikely that he will ever be able to outperform his contract. So really, the best front offices don't need to sign these guys because you know in baseball that just having these guys is not going to be enough. It's like the lazy man's way out when you're a GM or a baseball person talking to your owner, like, hey, give me the money. I'm telling you, it's going to be so huge to sign this guy. And that's what San Diego has done time and time again. And look where it's gotten them. Absolutely nowhere.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, great stuff. Thanks a ton. Always a joy to catch up with you, David. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
All right, have a great day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That's David Sampson. You can hear the Nothing Personal Daily podcast, former.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.